life did not begin with hate. I don't recall the feeling as a child. I always felt myself to be more a sheep in the midst of wolves, innocent as a dove. I was in the temple keeping true to my fasts, my prayers. Stephen was out in the streets, bringing charity to widows and orphans, preaching truth to drunks and the crippled. I was blameless in the ancient law of Israel while Stephen was blaspheming on the very holy ground of God.
So what did you do?
We spread lies, created an uproar that had him brought to trial.
What did he argue?
That Jesus was the Messiah. And the temple of God was no longer the only place where God could be worshipped. Blasphemy. I heard his final words even amongst the roar of the crowd. Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. Lord, do not hold this sin against them. Even in death, a final blasphemy on his lips. In that moment, I vowed to destroy all those that spoke of this Jesus of Nazareth as the Messiah.
That little clip from Paul the Apostle, some of us went to see that together. Powerful story. Very dark, very difficult to deal with, but very, very true to the count, I believe. I want to just begin this morning with kind of an introduction of where we're going with our service today, just to kind of help you kind of get up to speed. This is going to be touching base with a few things in the past, but also pointing to where we're going in the future. Remember back in Acts chapter 9, it had been 3 years since Jesus had met with Saul on the road to Damascus, and 3 years had come and gone as Saul had finally decided it was time to return to Jerusalem. Make things right. And so he begins this trek after he's kicked out of Damascus, as he's let down through the wall, as he begins heading back to Jerusalem. He begins this process of wanting to set things right, and it's a dead wrong. It was the wrong thing to do, and the Lord even tells him that because there's been too much damage done. You think about all of the things that he had done. He had ripped families from their property, from their home. He had destroyed whole families. He had destroyed businesses. He had destroyed homes. People had lost their property, lost their valuables, lost their keepsakes. They had lost family members who had been killed because of Saul. Family members that had been tortured to blaspheme because of Saul. That still walked with a limp or with difficulty getting around because of Saul. It was too much damage done. On the other hand, there were his friends, the buddies he'd grown up with around the temple there, who were with him and starting to get this ball rolling with Stephen at the beginning as they conspired together in the local synagogue. They saw Paul as being, or Saul as being a traitor, a betrayer, someone who turned his back on his faith and now was walking in a direction that was, they all knew, to be against the Lord, against the God that we worship. And so the Jews began to against him. But Saul was convinced, I can fix this. I can fix it. Does that sound familiar to any of you? I know I can fix it. I know I can set it right. I know I can do this. God tells him, you can't. This is the kind of depth of pain that doesn't heal easily. It isn't the kind of thing you can just walk away for 3 years and come back and fix it. It doesn't work that way. Here's this conversation that Saul had while he was in Jerusalem. After he returned, he said, I was praying in the temple. I fell into a trance. I saw a vision of Jesus saying to me, hurry, leave Jerusalem, for the people here won't accept your testimony about me. It was too soon. It was too early. He couldn't do it. He shouldn't have done it. But Lord, I argued, they certainly know that in every synagogue I imprisoned and beat those who believed in you, and I was complete agreement when your witness Stephen was killed. I stood by and kept the coat. They knew where I came from. All these people know me. Surely they'll listen to me, right, when I come back. Surely they'll listen to my change of heart, and when I tell them about all the dots that got connected in Jesus, they'll believe, won't they? You actually have Saul arguing with Jesus. I don't know, I got this feeling if Jesus came up to me and he said, I want you to go over there, I'd say, okay, do you want me to run or walk? It's not a matter of where, it's a matter of doing what I'm told. If he says jump, the only question is how high, right? But Saul had something in him that said, you know, I think I can tweak out a few more days and finally break through with these people. And he argued with the Lord about it. That's how strong his resolve was. His ego, his own inner strength, his own sense of, I can do this myself, please. I know I can fix this. So I think even with the Lord telling him he needed to go, I think Saul hung around a little while longer. He wasn't that anxious to get away. Just one more trip to the synagogue. Just one more trip to the temple. Just one more. Just give me another chance. Man, this resonates with me. I don't know if it does with you or not. The Lord still came back and said to me, go, or I'm going to send you far away to the Gentiles. Send you far away. Far away. You don't belong here. You need to move on. And you remember how the story ends. Barnabas even goes with Saul to meet, introduce him to the apostles, and they are accepting of him, and he's able to flow around the city however he wants to. But his buddies back in the temple, they heard about him. And there were some of those families, I'm convinced, were still struggling. But he wanted his friends to know about what he'd discovered. And he started procrastinating. He started arguing with the Lord. He started thinking better. I know better what I can. I know I can. Just one more argument. Just one more time. And so we know the Christian brothers, this is still in Acts chapter 9, it covers a lot of history. But we also know that the Christian brothers then went to Jerusalem and they found Saul. When the people at the synagogue decided he needed to die, they found him, they took him, and they sent him far away, 300 miles north of them by boat, one-way ticket. He's not coming back. He didn't go willingly. They had to make him go. And their key idea was get Saul out of here, send him far, far away, just like the Lord had told him, because he's made such a tumult here. And you remember the ending of that story at the end of chapter 9 is then they had this peace and harmony that suddenly descended upon the area. The giving Peter the freedom then to go on, we talked about Aeneas and Dorcas. And so Saul lives in Tarsus for the next 10 years. Luke just goes silent on Saul. You don't hear anything about that 10-year gap, what he was doing. He was in Arabia, Cilicia, he was all over that area, preaching, teaching, living, maybe learning how to sew tents, things like that. He was doing all of those things, all in the quiet, all in the back recesses, all out of sight. Lord had some work to do with Saul about his ego. This guy who argues with me about what he should be doing, he needs to learn some humility. So that's kind of where we're going with our lesson this morning. He goes to there until this guy Barnabas comes back. He tries one more time. 10 years ago, he had tried to introduce him to the elders in Jerusalem with success there, but it still, the trip failed. Now it was time for Barnabas to go look for Saul. Some people say time heals all wounds. Have you heard that expression? Yeah. I don't buy it. I don't think it's true at all. I think it's true that some wounds do become less painful over time. Some wounds are small enough you do forget about them. They do kind of go away. Some wounds, though, never heal. Some wounds are painful to the day you die. The scars remain, if nothing else. There are some wounds that only Jesus can heal. And what we're going to be doing is talking about Saul and what he went through in trying to regain his relationship with his friends back in Jerusalem. And in that process, derive some things from that, I think, that might be useful for us this morning as we worship together. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about Saul. I want to continue on the story we started really in the earlier part. I want to talk a little bit about Saul's Tarsus, about the time that he spent there, the time that was coming. 13 years since meeting Jesus on the road to Damascus. He's there sitting in Tarsus doing whatever he did for those 10 years that he was there. It was 10 years since he and some Barnabas had gone to Jerusalem and got approved by the elders, but somehow things just didn't work out in Jerusalem for them, and he ended up coming back. So Barnabas, then 10 years later, is finally sent to Antioch. All of a sudden, the gospel is beginning to break out among the Gentiles there. All of a sudden, there's an incredible response from the community, and as the church begins to plant itself and to emerge and to grow, this gets the attention of the elders and the apostles back in Jerusalem, and they send Barnabas. Of course they send Barnabas. He's the perfect guy for sending on missions like this. He loves the people he's working with, and he makes a difference in their lives. But Barnabas gets there into Antioch, and he suddenly realizes he needs help. I'm sorry about the reading this morning, Stephanie. I don't know what's going on with these microphones, but I'm going to figure that out one of these days, because the whole story was right there. We read it this morning. I don't know if you were able to pick up on it. But Barnabas is there. He gets into Antioch, and he suddenly realizes he needs help. And so he goes right over to Tarsus, just a short distance away, and he starts looking for Saul. He remembers him from 10 years before when they tried to convince the people in Jerusalem that Saul had changed his ways and that he was a different man. So he goes looking for him, and he finds him. And when he finds Saul in Tarsus, he invites him to come back with him to Antioch. And for the next year, Saul and Barnabas work together. It's really interesting the way the words work here, and I'll be sharing that with you shortly. They work together for the next year, and then the prophet comes from Jerusalem, and he talks about how Jerusalem is going to experience this famine during the reign of Claudius, and he tells the people there in Antioch, and the Antiochians, or however you say their name, they send gifts back to Jerusalem, and so Barnabas and Saul make this second trip back to Jerusalem, only this time they're bearing gifts to help them prepare for what's ahead. It's been 14 years since he met Jesus on the road to Damascus, and 11 years since Saul's last visit to Jerusalem. I think that's important. A lot of times we think of Saul's life, and we think, well, he was converted on the road, and then he started writing letters. You know, like the Lord just kind of dumped all this information into his head, and he just started regurgitating it out, you know, kind of thing. That's not how it happened. There's 14 years of struggling, of working through what he had done and the consequences that he had to bear for that. And the realizing that there were these open wounds that he left behind that may never find full healing. There was this struggle that Saul had that had to be worked out. 3 years in wasn't early enough. Remember, we talked about that just shortly ago. 3 years hadn't been long enough. But Saul was going to argue, he was going to fix it, right? And the church finally sent him off. Said, get out of here. You don't need to be here. But it's been 11 years now since that time. So Barnabas and Saul then returned to Antioch. It's just interesting how Luke just drops these little nuggets. He said, Barnabas and Saul take the gift to Jerusalem. The end of the next chapter, he says they take the gift and then they go back to Antioch. And Antioch is where they're going to go from the first missionary journey, which is, I thought it was Jerusalem. A lot of times, I don't know why, just sometimes you have these assumptions you make and then you actually start studying and find out, oh, okay. So anyway, they go back to Antioch. I want to talk to you a minute about Barnabas and Saul. You see them listed in Luke's account in Acts in this order: Barnabas and Saul, And I've become convinced as reading through this and studying, and I'll show you through some of the logic here in a moment, that we're talking about a period of time when Saul came out, those 10 years later, came out of Tarsus, and Barnabas found him, that this was a time when Saul began to learn about servanthood. He'd been the big shot, right? In Jerusalem, when he was in charge of everything. He'd been the man who took charge of things and moved forward with aggression, and when he was convicted about something, he took the reins and he got in there and did it. And God spent the last 14 years working that out of him, I believe. And so you see Barnabas and Saul then finally taking this collection and going to Jerusalem. And I just kind of imagine Barnabas being the lead character here. That he's the one that's kind of leading the way, and Saul is just coming along with him. He needs to quietly enter Jerusalem so he doesn't stir up another ruckus, and then quietly exit. And so Barnabas takes Saul to Jerusalem to meet the apostles 3 years after he met Jesus on the road once more. Saul is sent back to Tarsus for 10 years. Luke is silent about those 10 years. And after 10 years, Barnabas brings Saul from Tarsus to Antioch for that 1 year. Barnabas and Saul visit Jerusalem again at the end of that story that we read this morning. And Barnabas and Saul then return to Antioch. When they begin their first missionary journey in chapter 13, we're moving a little bit beyond here, but I want to make this one point just very clearly. The first missionary journey begins. It's Barnabas and Saul beginning this process. But then Luke notes in chapter 13, verse 9, that Saul was also known as Paul. That was his Roman name. He's getting ready to go to the Gentiles, far away to the Gentiles, Jesus had predicted. And then it changes to Paul and Barnabas as they continue that first missionary journey. I think Luke's telling us something significant about this journey that Saul is making until he becomes Paul, that there's this work that the Lord had to do with him. Some have suggested those first 3 years were spent actually with Jesus in the wilderness, just kind of soaking in what the apostles had learned so that he could be along with them, someone who'd walked with Christ during that time. I don't know if that's true or not. I know that he's working on his heart, he's working on his thinking, he's working on his mind, he's working on his background. The Lord had a lot of stuff to work out of Saul before he was ready to begin that journey. And it's kind of the same with us, isn't it? We'd like to think, oh yeah, I became a Christian and bam, I'm all better. Now everything's all fixed. And you don't realize that there's a lot of grinding, a lot of working, a lot of pushing that's going to have to happen over the years to come until you're ready for service. That was hard to learn. So what are we talking about? What's the application? Remember, we ended here with our last little introduction here. Some say time heals old wounds. I don't believe that's true. I think some wounds become less painful over time. Some wounds never completely heal, but some wounds only Jesus can heal. I want to focus on that as we close here this morning. We've all wounded other people, haven't we? You know, one of the hardest things in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm Celebrate Recovery, any of those 8 steps or 12-step programs that you go through, one of the hardest things is doing the moral inventory, step 4. That's where I have to look at my heart and see what the problem is inside, deep inside. Then it comes with step 8 and 9, where I finally start making a list of all those people I've hurt. And you start, at step 9, you start working through that list, calling them on the phone, visiting them at work, visiting them at lunch. I'm so sorry. A lot of guys never make it through the 12 steps because they get hung up right at those points. They can't do it. They can't look at themselves. And they can't fix it. They can't face the people they've hurt. We've all wounded other people. And I think that's one of the most common things you hear in AA is like, everybody needs to hear this. Just not alcoholics. Everybody needs to know. And by the way, They're all based on the principles of the Beatitudes. But also, we've been wounded by other people. And you, and only you, know how deep some of those wounds are. Some of them were easily healed and just moved on. No big deal. Go on. I just won't talk to them anymore. You just kind of move through that process. But there are other ones that won't go away. They don't submit to my desire to forgive, to let go, to move on. They continue to grind and hurt and push us. I have a feeling that sounds familiar for most of us. If you haven't, you just haven't lived long enough. If you haven't either hurt someone or been hurt by someone, you've not been around long enough. And we always have this thing, I can fix it. Drives us crazy, right? I can fix this. I know I can fix it. I know I can get this right. I know I can do it. The reality is that sometimes you can fix it. And we're going to talk about how Jesus addresses that. There are times when you do go to someone and you do are able to fix it and you are able to reconcile and work through it. But there are sometimes when you can't. Sometimes when it just doesn't work. And those are really hard. You gave it your best shot. You tried to fix it. You tried to help it. You tried to work through it. But you couldn't. You're in that same situation that Saul was in. You can't. You can't do it. Saul tried to repair the damage he had done, right? He went back after those 3 years trying to, said, look, all these things I did, now they see the change in me, they want to listen now, right? Barnabas even got invested with Saul. I'll help you try to fix that. Let's start with the apostles, and then we'll see where that goes from here. And it didn't go well once they left there. They accepted them, but not everybody did. And then finally, the church had to tell Saul himself. Jesus wasn't enough. The church had to take him and send him and says, you can't fix it here. And so they sent him far, far away. I think that's really important. There are some wounds that we do, some things we've done to others that we need to just walk away from them and move on. You can't fix it. You won't fix it. Try as best you can. It's time to move on. You gotta go on. And there are times when we've been hurt by others as well, and we just have to move on. The question is, how do you do that? Jesus' advice was very clear. He said, if you've offended someone, you have only one option. Right? Go. Go. Talk to them. Tell them. Confront them. Speak with them. Somehow, do what you can to fix it. Well, what about when someone's offended me? Same answer. Go. Go. Talk, straighten this out as best you can. Even if it's on the way to taking you to court, you work it out so that you don't have to go before the judge. The key is, when you've been hurt or you've hurt someone else, you have a responsibility to go. But there are times when it doesn't work, and Paul could speak to that with authority. There are times when your best efforts do not work, and his advice is found. Romans, if it's possible, so far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Insofar as it depends upon you. After you've done all you can, and it still doesn't work, it's time to move on. Jesus told Saul, you're going to be going far, far away to the Gentiles. The disciples, when it wasn't working for Saul, took him and sent him away. There's just a process you need to go through to fix this, and it's not going to involve the people you hurt because the damage was too deep. They're going to have to deal with their pain. You have to deal with yours. Get on the road. Go. On the other hand, there are those who were left behind. They've got to deal with these things as well. So when it doesn't work, there's just this process of forgiving. Let's walk through this. There's all kinds of lists out there. This is my, kind of my list that I've used for myself. And I've used it with others. There are other lists that are available as well. You need to make sure that you're touching base with some things, basic things that go into being able to forgive someone when it just doesn't work. Number one is identify the offense. You've got to know what it is you're hurt about. And you've got to identify whether that's real or not. Was it just an imagined hurt? Was it just something I made up? Is it something I brought from my own background? Or is it something that was legitimately a pain to me because of what they did or how they did it? You need to be able to identify that and specify exactly what it is so you know exactly what it was. And then you have to make a decision, a choice right from the outset, I'm going to forgive. Now, I've got to line up a lot of feelings that go along with this. I've got to line up a lot of stuff, but I am going to choose to forgive. Why? Because Jesus told me I had to. That's my mission, is to forgive. It's not an option, right? It's something I have to choose to do. And once I've chosen to do it, then my life becomes this process of learning how to do it thoroughly, effectively, from my heart. And there are days when you have to do it every day. There are days when you have to do it every hour. But you will practice this process of forgiveness because you've chosen to do that because the Lord told you to. You need to be able to distinguish in time between the offense and the offender. For Saul, it was really important that you understood the mindset, and we can accept Saul when we understand the mindset he was coming from, the same mindset of Elijah who had to purify the land from the prophets of Baal and kill them because they threatened Israel's integrity and safety before the Lord. The Lord was going to bring judgment on him if he didn't do something dramatic. This is out of that same kind of spirit, the same kind of thinking that we've got to please the Lord, not each other. We've got to make sure we address this kind of thing. And out of the purity of his motives, he did horrible, horrible things. And there comes this point in thinking when we separate what that person did and the context in which they did it and the person themselves. And hopefully, we can take that punishment that that person deserves for what they did and hand that to God. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. We hand it back to him. Say, it's yours. I'm handing it to you. I'm going through this process of forgiveness, and this is really hard to do because I want to hang on to it. I want that person to suffer. But I'm going to choose, God, to hand it back to you. Give it back. Not going to do it perfectly, but I'm letting you know my intention, Lord, to let it go. Then finally, once you start praying for the offender, for the person that's really hurt you, once you can grow to the point where you actually can pray for them, things begin to start happening on your heart. Things begin to change, and you actually can begin being compassionate for the one that's injured, us. So Paul would finally make a visit to Jerusalem, the final one. Acts chapter 21 through 23 tells us about this last visit. And he went, now it had been 20 years, maybe more, since his last trip to road to Damascus, his three-year attempt to go to Jerusalem, his 14-year trip to Jerusalem and then back out. And finally, he makes one more trip. Well, he made a couple more trips in there, one for the... But okay, this is his last trip. 20 years. He found a path of forgiveness while he was there. And he found people dealing with the path of revenge. The Christians received us warmly. These were the people that heard Jesus' word, obeyed it, believed in it, trusted in him. It softened their hearts. They were able to receive Saul back in spite of all the damage he'd done. Somehow they were able to embrace him. They received us warmly. But then there were the Jews who did not let go, who did not forget, who harbored that resentment, who harbor that anger. And when they saw Saul, they simply pulled back on the tools that they'd used to convict Stephen, and they started applying them to Saul, making up all kinds of false accusations and stirring up the city. And what would happen is the Romans would have to rescue Saul out of the mob that was created, and they would finally take him to Caesarea. And as he's waiting on the Sanhedrin people to arrive, they said, "We're going to send you back to Jerusalem." And he said, "I appeal to Caesar." He knew what his fate would be death once he got back there. From that, everything was set. If he hadn't appealed to Caesar, one of the officials said, we'd be able to try him and let him go. Because he appealed to Caesar, he's got to go to Rome. How many books of the New Testament would we not have had not been for that? Those 2 years. I think Luke gathered a lot of his material in there. And I think that's what led to it. But the key here is that there were people who had choices to make early on. One chose to forgive, and one chose to resent. And so it was Paul's appeal to Caesar began his journey. So my encouragement this morning, based on what we see in the life of Paul, based on what we know from our own pain experience, based on what we've done to others, let me encourage you to choose the path of forgiveness. Because Jesus chose that path for you. Right? God demonstrated his own love for us in this. While we were sinners, Christ died for us. I hope you've heard that loud and clear this morning in our worship, in our communion. That key is key to our making it, trusting that what he did was enough for us. That's from the Apostle Paul, and it's the voice of experience. While we were sinners, Christ died for us. Let's all stand together and sing.